Welcome to the next edition of Grid Forward Chats. I'm Bryce Yonker. Today we have with us three guests, some leaders of the independent system operators and RTOs across North America. We have Pablo Vegas from ERCOT, Barbara Sugg from SPP, and Mike Law from AESO. I'm going to let you all define your acronyms, but thanks for being on with us. So first, we're going to head over to you, Mike. Can you do a quick introduction of who you are, how you landed there, and what AESO is?
All right. Well, thank you, Bryce. And hello, everybody. This is Mike Law from the Alberta ISO up in Canada. I'm sure like most of my colleagues, becoming an ISO CEO was not really one of our kindergarten dreams, but I've been in this industry for 25 years, everything from the wholesale commercial trading through to the retail businesses. And when I joined the ISO, I just recognized and loved the complexity of this business, and it's hooked me ever since.
Thanks for coming in from Alberta, Mike. Barbara, if you can go next with SPP.
Thanks, and thanks for the invitation to participate this afternoon. I'm Barbara Sugg from Southwest Power Pool. We operate the RTO region that stretches from the Canadian border north of North Dakota down to southeast New Mexico and the panhandle of Texas. I have been in this industry for 34 years this month, actually, with the vast majority of it in the IT space, and have been at SPP for a very long time, serving most recently as our senior vice president of IT. It's been a fun place to be to help develop the markets that actually have been our full integrated marketplace has been live now 10 years as of last week. So we're excited about that, and really honored to be the CEO now. And for the last 4 years, it's been great.
Thanks, Barbara. Finally, Pablo with ERCOT, if you can introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Bryce. It's a real pleasure to be here with you and with Mike and Barbara. ERCOT is the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. We are the ISO that serves the majority, about 90% of the Texas electric customers. We have about 26 million meters here in Texas that we serve. I came similar to Mike, you know, wasn't my kindergarten plan that I had ready to execute to end up here, but the best laid plans always take you to the most interesting places. So I came to it through about 10 years in the management consulting industry, and then about 17 years in the regulated gas and electric utility space. And so I've been here at ERCOT now just over a year and a half. And, you know, it was an opportunity to get involved in what I think is one of the most dynamic and impactful businesses and industries around today. And it was such a unique challenge. Texas has had a lot of interesting challenges in the last few years. And the opportunity to step in and help be part of the leadership story and part of the journey that we're going on here was a great opportunity. So that's how I ended up here at ERCOT, and I'm looking forward to all the things we'll be talking about here this afternoon.
Great. So we'll be brief on our definitions and our level setting. Pablo, I'll just keep it with you. What is an organized energy market? How do you define an RTO or an ISO?
Yeah, so for us here in Texas, it's a pretty specific set of requirements and obligations that we serve. I like to describe it that we're kind of like the air traffic controller of the electric grid here. So as an electric grid operator, we do not own the assets on the grid. We don't own the transmission facilities. We don't own the generating plants. We don't serve customers directly or bill them for their electric services. But what we do is we help to orchestrate all of the infrastructure that's involved in doing so. And we do that through supporting the financial transactions that occur, the buying and selling of power between retailers and wholesale power providers. We help to make sure that we operate the grid reliably. That's our core mandate. So we have to balance the frequency of the grid and keep supply and demand in balance at all times. That's our core operational mandate. And then we also have to ensure that there's open access to our transmission system. So we have to make sure any customer, any load can get access, and any supplier, any generator can also get access to that transmission system without any prejudice, so that we can have a pure open access strategy. And the one thing that's a little bit unique to Texas from other ISOs is we also do retail switching here in Texas. So when customers decide to choose one retailer or another, we actually facilitate that switching process and we manage that flow on behalf of the retailer. So that's what those are the kinds of services we provide to the grid here in Texas.
Good overall definition. And Barbara, is there anything you would add to the kind of general capabilities that you all and other ISOs and RTOs are providing?
Yeah, sure. You know, if we think about the energy markets as a whole, you know, really it is a marketplace. It's a place that people come together to buy and or sell. These RTO markets really do create an opportunity for energy buyers and sellers to get the best prices for their product while serving the region in the most reliable and economic way. It also opens up the access to such vast and diverse resources within the footprint that may be renewable resources or more reliability type resources that you may need. And the market really facilitates all of those resources being accessible.
Like all regions, I know all markets are unique, Mike, but maybe you can talk a little bit about the resources and assets that are showing up in your guys' territory. And then Pablo, I'll kick it back over to you to kind of add what you guys are seeing from that perspective as well.
Yeah, and it is interesting. In Alberta, we are very blessed with a great wind regime and a great solar regime, surprisingly for many people to hear. But ultimately, South Alberta is an incredibly sunny part of the world. So over the last 5-7 years, we've seen a real boom in renewable development, wind and solar. Starting to see some really good uptake in battery storage assets as well. And because of the nature of our economy here, heavy industrial, we have a lot of natural gas cogen units linked to the industrial processes. And we're also seeing the development of a number of natural gas combined cycle units. So really good broad-based generation development within the province at the moment.
Yeah, on the supply side for us, it's a similar story. It's been a rapidly changing mix, and so in the last 20 years, we've gone from over 95% of our supply mix consisting of natural gas, coal, and nuclear to now just about 55% consisting of that mix, and the balance, 43% roughly, is now in renewables and batteries. So we've seen that mix change very quickly over the last few years. We are approaching 40,000 megawatts of wind in the ERCOT market. We're near 20,000 megawatts of solar. We're over 5,000 of batteries. And we're an 85,000 megawatt peaking grid in the summertime. So it's on any given day, we can be near or over 50% of all the energy being served coming from intermittent or renewable resources, which is really incredible. So it's been one of the strong attributes of the market, how it's economically attracting renewables, but it's also creating some of the most challenging operational issues that we're working through, managing that flexibility need and that intermittency.
We're gonna press ahead with our topics. There's so many dynamics happening in each market, but Barbara, I'm gonna kick this one to you. You all have different offerings that you're bringing, right, to the industry, to the community, whether it's capacity solutions, energy solutions, and new offerings that you're developing. Can you talk a little bit about the portfolio of solutions that SPP brings? Then Pablo, maybe I'll have you next. And Mike, if there's something else that you want to add on that we haven't covered.
You know, as SPP, as an RTO, SPP certainly is providing reliability coordination, markets administration, tariff administration, transmission planning. SPP is in a really unique position where we're located in the U.S. and with a somewhat unique governance model that is very appealing to entities in the western part of the U.S. Who are looking for some energy market alternatives out there. And they've come to SPP and had us providing various services, including what I think of as our core competencies in reliability coordination, energy imbalance. We're assisting with the resource adequacy program out there. The most exciting aspect right now is over 40 entities out in the West that have been working with us to write the rules for a day ahead market alternative for them. And that is nearing completion, hoping to be filed with FERC actually by the end of this month. Very exciting times at SPP.
Yeah, and you know, where all of our markets are different, which is what's really interesting, because the way that they've evolved in the North America has really provided a lot of diverse options for customers and for, you know, choices that they have. The Texas market is one where there's very little regulation around how supply comes onto the grid, and so we're an open market in that, with that regard. If something can be economic and make money, then it can operate and connect into the grid. We effectively do a connect and manage strategy in ERCOT. So we run local stability studies when we have a new supply wanting to connect in. And then if they, you know, if the grid can stably connect it, we'll go ahead and let them connect, and the deliverability and the transmission and all of that, that can follow. And so what we have been offering is, I think, a very rapid connection into the electric grid for customers and for suppliers. So I think that's one benefit. And then because of the kind of the open market features of ERCOT, we see a lot of kind of innovation come to the table. We've been working on a virtual power plant construct that is really based on, you know, independent competitive businesses saying we've got assets that we think can actually deliver not only energy for the energy market, but also provide ancillary services and be responsive as an ancillary service provider. And so we've qualified groups of distributed batteries in people's homes that are aggregated as both ancillary services support and energy resources. I think that's one of the first ever in North America to be able to do that. And so we really provide a very open platform for people to be able to experiment and do R&D in, and eventually, if it works, to scale it.
Mike, anything on what you all are offering, or should I take it to our next topic?
Yeah, I mean, we're very similar to ERCOT in many ways. An energy-only market, I think the uniqueness of Alberta is the fact that our transmission construct and policy is an uncongested transmission system. So really provides access to anybody that wants to connect to the grid and creates as high a level of competition in the generation market as we can, because people are not constrained off. There's not challenges with respect to getting energy to market.
I'm going to start this one with you, Barbara, and it's going to be around volatility. So we've seen many systems reach their peak demand in recent months and even recent weeks. We've seen unexpected outages and disruptions, and the spike of prices and the availability of resources seems to have been driving quite a bit of volatility in the overall energy landscape. How do markets address this? How do you all deal with volatility, and what sort of role do you all play with regards to these dynamics that are unfolding?
Well, that is a loaded question. And before the markets can really address it, you have to look at resource adequacy as a whole, and we have to get that right. You have to not only have enough resources, you have to have the right kinds of resources to create that resource adequacy. In SPP, our regional state committee, which is made up of commissioners from the various states that participate in SPP, they actually own rules around resource adequacy as well as cost allocation. And right now we've created sort of a unique committee structure that brings stakeholders from the regional state committee and the SPP board of directors and the SPP stakeholders together to try to solve these resource adequacy challenges. Now, once you get the right assets in place, certainly market incentives can encourage proper behavior. Markets ultimately help a ton by giving you more price certainty and hedging against some of the real-time price volatility and congestion volatility you had. I really am wishful that SPP didn't have the congestion that it has, or was a little bit more like Alberta. How great would that be if we had that all across the U.S., in fact? But we are certainly working hard to find ways to incent the resources to be there and to be available, and we need those market incentives to help make sure that happens.
I had three questions in one, which related to resource adequacy, which it was great that you addressed it. Mike or Pablo, anybody on this volatility in the role of markets?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, from an energy-only market perspective, volatility is a feature. It's the mechanism of sending price signals to get that long-term investment in place. Ultimately, that is what drives the resource adequacy, is the short-term price signal and volatility driving through to those long-term investment signals.
The one thing I'll add, Bryce, is we're starting to see the evidence of this in ERCOT, and it's the fact that the loads, the customers that are coming onto the system, the amount of time that it takes for large loads to now come online in an electric grid is vastly different than it used to be back since the dawn of RTOs and ISOs. And that's starting to change the paradigm a little bit. And it's starting to have us look at that market design, because like we're also, as an energy-only market, it's the real-time price signals that over time send enough of a consistent signal to justify the investment in a long 20, 30-year asset. However, we're starting to see demand growth at a pace that outpaces what it takes to develop supply, what it takes to develop the transmission to serve it. And that starts to change your planning paradigm. And you have to look at the market design a little bit differently. You have to make sure that those clear signals are getting through loud and clear when they need to be, and that you can have responsiveness on the supply side, because in Texas, Texas has been very successful with economic growth, a lot of population growth in the state, a lot of industrial and economic growth. And what we have seen is that, our reserve margins at peak periods have started to, erode pretty quickly over the last 5-10 years. And so now we're facing the influx of this new kind of demand out there, data centers, crypto miners, clean tech investments that are able to develop much more quickly than historical averages, would otherwise suggest. And we are trying to make sure we can keep up with the supply, because resource adequacy is at the core of really what we're trying to enable and support.
Yep. Mike, I'm going to kick this one to you first. So policy and regulatory impacts are a part of anything in the energy landscape, but I would say reasonably unique and somewhat interesting with regards to energy markets of recent. So can you talk a bit about, in your case, the province or national impacts that the policy and regulatory landscape has on the market there?
Yeah, and I think for all of us, we'll probably say one of the biggest challenges that we have is policy clarity, policy certainty in our environments broadly. And everybody is facing challenge with respect to environmental policy and the impact that that's having on development of thermal assets specifically within our regions. But I think that, quite broadly, I've started to recognize that within the electricity industry, we are being driven more and more by social policy, environmental policy, and industrial development policy than by policy that's actually focused at electricity development, reliability, et cetera. And it's making our lives significantly more challenging.
Anything from you, Barbara, on this topic?
Significantly more challenging is the key operative phrase there. There is certainly a lot of regulatory and policy work that's taking place coming out of FERC and coming out of the EPA. Those environmental regulations are absolutely worth noting. The latest EPA regulations are likely to have a direct impact on the same resources that participate in the markets. Oh, and those are the same resources that you really need to keep the lights on. The interesting thing about Markets Plus is there are a lot of more progressive state-driven requirements out in the West to meet environmental policies and standards. And those types of standards are known on the front end of that market development and factor right into the market design, which I think makes that pretty unique.
Costly distribution upgrades, frequent extreme weather events, demand surging from an onslaught of distributed energy resources adoption. Do these challenges sound familiar? If so, you need Virtual Peaker's cloud-based distributed energy platform. We're empowering modern utilities with the tools needed in the new energy landscape. The Virtual Peaker platform unifies all aspects of DER management, from DERMS to customer engagement and demand forecasting. Learn more at virtual-peaker.com.
I'm going to have you start this one, Pablo. The grid is modernizing. Real-time visibility, advanced controls, predictive analytics, better forecasting. I can keep going. How is the advanced functionality that's now becoming more available, how is that impacting markets and the role that you all play?
So one of the things that we're wanting to explore because of the advent of things like AI, machine learning, supercomputing, access to supercomputing processing speeds, is starting to integrate our longer-term planning tools and models in a way that better reflect or are more like what our real-time operations models are. That's something that, at least for in ERCOT's world, you know, we've got one level of granularity and clarity in our like 5-year, 6-year out planning models. But we would like to get to a place where we could actually have an hourly by hour, an 8,000, however many, 8,650, I think it is, hours in a year view of what we expect the dispatch to look like in 5 years and be able to model that and adjust that any given day of the year as resource mixes change, as policy change, as economics change. That level of clarity would enable us to start to solve problems at a time period where it's actually possible to address them versus keeping up with them after the fact. Machine learning, AI, and supercomputing capabilities are going to enable that kind of super advanced planning modeling that today, I don't think anybody in the world does. And if you can really marry your real-time operational capabilities with your planning capabilities, that's a leap forward that I think we're all looking at. Our teams are all talking about, you know, those kinds of capabilities. I'm excited about that as one potential and harvesting kind of the technology to be able to do that, because that's frankly one of our biggest challenges right now is making sure we can adapt to the pace at which planning has to change because the grid is changing so much and our customers are changing so much.
Barbara, anything from you on the advanced functionality modernization topic?
Yeah, I mean, we've implemented a couple of things more recently, like dynamic line ratings on some of our facilities, topology control in some of our more limited situations. We're opening up some different transmission solutions to novel alternative solutions, you know, where maybe flexible AC transmission system devices, maybe storage as the transmission only asset, use of that battery storage. Definitely looking at better methodologies and technologies for predicting load, not just in the operating horizon, but also in the planning horizon. I think AI is absolutely going to be a game changer for us as well.
Mike, I'm going to have you start this one, and I'll just keep it short. How are energy markets evolving? And maybe if you want to go on the second question of that, what's in the way for progress on advancing towards those next steps of where the evolution is taking you?
You know, I think that with the rate of change that we're actually seeing on our physical systems, one of the challenges that we have is the ability of the energy markets to keep up and appropriately and effectively price all of the various different attributes and assets that we actually need within the management of our systems. We're constantly struggling to create the right incentives for the right type of attributes from the right type of generation. And I think, you know, really we are moving incredibly fast on that at the best of times, but it is really a race to keep up. I also think that we're seeing a huge shift onto the customer and the demand side within markets. An aspect that's definitely getting in the way in our jurisdiction is the physical infrastructure advancement development capabilities on the distribution and customer end of things. And I think that's an area that generally speaking, we need to spend a lot of time and money on.
How about you, Barbara? What's evolving and getting in the way of that future state?
Well, SPP has been partnering with NREL and with EPRI on some of the research and technologies that they're looking at that we think can help, looking at different ways to participate in the model. You know, I talked a little bit about the storage resources and what that means. The order 2222 from out of FERC on distributed energy resources is, you know, changing some of what SPP does. We don't have that type of activity with as much in our footprint as we see in other parts of the country. But Mike hit the nail on the head that we really have to have the markets keeping up with this and pricing for more than just the cost to produce. And, you know, we have to understand the reliability attributes that we need to have and be sure that the market incents those resources to show up. And I think that's some of those rather large challenges that we need to have in place to really have the markets fully supporting the reliability needs.
Pablo?
Yeah, a couple things. So the rapid pace of intermittent resources is starting to challenge aspects, you know, kind of fundamental aspects like stability and inertia requirements for the grid. So the, you know, things that are evolving are, you know, we're starting to look at grid forming inverters and technologies that can really help to support the stable integration of further and further renewables and intermittent type resources or inverter based resources, including batteries. So that's one thing. And then the other thing that's really evolving is on the load side, on the customer side, large loads that can actually be price responsive or be able to move in response to dynamic pricing and to potentially scarcity and demand signals. That's something that's becoming more and more important. And as these large loads that we've been talking about are coming onto the grids around the country, we need to have a much tighter integration between the grid operator and all the resources that are on the grid. And so one of the barriers that we're working through is kind of just the historic business model where, you know, the customer just basically takes power, you know, through a transmission service provider, and, you know, the supplier just delivers onto the grid. We need to have a highly and tightly orchestrated connection between the grid operator and all of the resources that are now on the grid in order to be able to manage how dynamic the load and the supply can be at any point throughout a given day. Because you could see, you know, gigs of supply come off the grid with just, you know, the wind dying down or the sun setting, and being able to be very dynamic and working with load and customers to be responsive to that and to the price signals that get generated from that. So we have to get more tightly orchestrated, and we have to kind of overcome some of those older mindsets around how customers and suppliers work together with the grid operator.
Barbara, I'm going to have you start this one. You seem to continually hear about how deeper geographic and more diverse resources lead to better outcomes. Why is that? Why is that important? What does that look like in practice? And what's the value in that diversity?
Well, let's start with the weather. It's not usually the same everywhere. And so many of our resources are weather dependent. And so the geographic diversity of resources, especially when you think about it from a weather impact perspective, that enables you to have access to resources you may not have access to because they may be impacted. You also have the potential of time zone diversity, which can help. You're not all peaking at the same time. You don't have the same needs for the same resources at the same time. And that can be a really big plus. If you think about the markets in the West, for example, Markets Plus, I mean, you could theoretically, and you got to have the transmission in place to make this happen. But I think the market helps identify the needs for that transmission. But you can be pulling together the hydro from the northwest, the solar from the desert southwest, and the wind from the eastern side of the western interconnection. And you're also talking about two different time zones with three different types of renewable sources. The opportunity to meet your renewable goals goes up astronomically in a market like that.
So I'm going to switch us to two last questions and then our wrap up. Pablo, resiliency, obviously a big topic, not in only in Texas, but in every single one of our markets. But what kind of role do markets and grid resiliency play? Where do those synergies and important areas of collaboration come together?
Yeah, it's absolutely fundamental to our role. You know, resiliency goes hand in hand with reliability, but a lot of people don't really understand kind of what, you know, what's the difference, right? You know, reliability is, you know, we're keeping the lights on in real time. But what happens when something impacts the grid, whether it's a winter storm, whether it's a hurricane, whether it's, you know, some type of an extreme event, how can the grid absorb that kind of an impact? And then how quickly can it recover? And that's where the energy markets and the grid operator play a really critical role, because we're always looking for where those weaknesses and where those seams might be, and looking at it through that lens so that we could recover our grid. And we're kind of unique because since we're an island, we have to be able to basically recover the ERCOT grid regardless of what comes in from whatever, you know, whatever side. And, you know, we don't have a lot of, we can't lean on the grids outside of ERCOT in order to help us with supply and to restart aspects of the grid. So we play a role in Black Start planning. We make sure that Black Start resources are compensated in the market fairly. Those are resources that, you know, don't have to have power already to be able to start generating power and start to restore service in the event that there's a, you know, fairly large loss of service because of some type of event. So as a grid operator, we help make sure that there's adequate Black Start capability, that there's adequate layers of resilience built into the transmission system. And those are the kind of services we provide to customers in ERCOT through the planning work that we do.
And then, Mike, I'm going to kick this one over to you. We talked a little bit about large loads, but transportation is electrifying, buildings are electrifying, industrial loads are electrifying, and the curve of demand seems like it's bending upward. So from an electrification or just from a demand a forecasting standpoint, how does that impact the role that markets are playing?
Well, I mean, you're dead on with the fact that the curve on demand as we look forward is hockey sticking to some extent, and it's that electrification effect that we see really kicking in. From our perspective, it's into the 2030s where we really expect to see a lot of that heavy electrification of industrial load, real EV penetration coming in. And you know, when we think about it from the market perspective, it is really about ensuring that those long-term signals and visibility of that change are clear and transparent to generators, investors. Ultimately, it comes down to their ability to see the impact of that change on the market and recognize the fundamental economic opportunity for them as investors and generators within the industry. But I also think that it's critical that the load side recognizes the part that they have to play. It's all very well and good to lean on new generation dynamics and capabilities, but fundamentally, with the way our system is changing, load has to become far more engaged, dynamic, and be a much stronger part of that marketplace in the end.
All right, last question. So we're going to go around to all of you. Barbara, I'm going to have you start. Are there any new and exciting innovations around advancing energy markets that are kind of particularly catching your attention now? And then a kind of a part of that, how can we, the collective we, the whole ecosystem, help support moving these ahead to a scale that really matters?
Well, there are definitely some interesting innovations that are going on. I just heard yesterday about a lot of investment in fusion technology out in the West, which is definitely interesting, but I'm not schooled on it. Advanced nuclear is getting a lot of attention. Carbon capture and storage are getting lots of attention as well, promising technologies that we're working on through our partnership with EPRI. They're exciting because they can help us have the right kind of resources to advance the energy transition itself in a more reliable way. Because there's certainly a lot of pressure to get that done quickly. I think the wider energy community helps to support that by being informed, by being engaged, by sharing what their experiences are. We all learn from each other. Love to hear some of the things that ERCOT is doing and Alberta are doing that SPP can learn from. And I think the ISO RTO community as a whole does a really good job of sharing both the successes and the pain points, so that we are all benefiting and moving forward from the learning and experiences that we're each exploring.
How about you, Pablo? What's exciting you from an innovation standpoint, and how do we take it ahead?
Yeah, for me, I love the vision of connecting more deeply into the distribution grid and the concept of really integrating the traditional transmission grid operator with the distribution grid and accessing distributed resources and leveraging them for reliability, for resilience, for economic potential. When you think about optimizing a grid, when you could actually get access to every rooftop solar and plugged in electric vehicle and battery wall and any other host of new technologies that are coming to bear, the potential to use that as a grid operator and really optimize the resources, I think offers tremendous value to markets and to customers. And so that's something that I'm really excited about. And really the only barrier I think in getting there is standards and just coming up with integration and interface standards so that we can communicate the right way. And these resources, you know, could operate, you know, at a level that they're looked at side by side with a traditional utility scale plant and a traditional utility scale customer. And so I think it's a tremendous opportunity ahead of us. I'm excited to go further into research and experiments on how we can do more of that.
Last word, Mike.
Yeah, and Barbara touched on things like carbon capture and storage, huge opportunity that we're trying to advance aggressively in the Alberta marketplace. But I agree with what both Pablo and Barbara have said. This is about the full value chain of the electricity industry, maximizing the utilization of the assets that are in it. We're in a world where we see the electricity usage and ultimately scale of our businesses increasing dramatically, and we need to make sure that we're optimizing these assets. Otherwise, the cost to consumers is going to start to escalate significantly. So I see a lot of opportunity and interest in that utilization, maximization of assets.
Barbara, Mike, Pablo, thanks for being on with us and sharing your perspectives. I have to take a shameless plug. Our main event this year is focused on the evolution of energy markets. So stay tuned for those details. We're looking forward to sharing them with everyone. And thank you all for the leadership. Energy markets play an absolutely central role in the energy ecosystem across North America. And this year is going to be a major one with developments in your jurisdictions and really across the country. So thanks for sharing your perspectives.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bryce.
Thanks again to our season sponsor, Virtual Peaker. If you enjoy Grid Forward Chats, please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, give us a like or a review, and tell your colleagues. You can listen to all episodes and learn more about our efforts to advance the grid at gridforward.org.